Music from a river. Pass the love along. We heard from John Angotti, Whatever You Do. We heard from Buddy Green, Fall Down Children. And Gene Watson was there, too, with her song Fly Again. 15 and a half minutes after the hour. It's a Monday morning. A marvelous and mellifluous Monday. And now joining us to turn our thoughts to, well, science and evolution and faith and creationism and all those good things. Dr. Don Clark, our resident biochemist, member of the Board of Creation Moments. Don, welcome back after a couple of missing weeks. Where you been, for Pete's sakes?
Oh, well, I've been went to Seattle initially for a Orphan Relief and Rescue Board meeting.
Okay.
And then I was there several days and then got back from Seattle, was home a day, and then had to drive back to Dallas-Fort Worth to take a flight to Fargo, North Dakota. I was heading into Canada to do some creation ministry up there.
Well, you couldn't fly all the way to Canada? You had to stop in Fargo? As Fargo isn't known as a great tourist destination, but...
Right. Yeah. Well, no, the fellow that was hosting me... and one of the events that we were participating in was the Apple and Corn Festival in Morden, Manitoba.
Okay.
And he was picking up some material in North Dakota, to take back to Canada.
So, well, you set up a booth there then, didn't you?
We had a booth, yes. We had a creation booth. We did indeed.
Okay. Well, was the turnout good? Was the response good? How did it kind of go up there in Canada?
Well, Saturday was the best day. We had almost constant traffic in the booth on Saturday. We had some moderate traffic on Friday, but the traffic was very, very good on Saturday. Talked to a lot of folks, some seeking. Actually talked to a couple of Chinese folks who were actually picking up some creation materials to take back to the underground church in China. So that was very, very encouraging. It was quite successful, and it was a good idea to have a booth at this festival.
And what's it called again?
It's called the Corn and Apple Festival.
Corn and Apple Festival.
In a little town called Morden. It's probably a town of maybe 2,000 to 3,000 people, but it draws in 20,000+ people for the festival.
Well, the Corn and Apple Festival, you appear to have planted a few seeds, perhaps.
And, oh, yes.
Take root in China. I think that's kind of...
Yes.
Well, we're glad to have you back. So, we missed you. We look forward to
these
conversations much.
What were you representing? What were you offering? You were talking about... Creation Moments or Don Clark's winery or what was you got your finger in so many pies, yeah?
Oh yeah, no, well, just helping out with the creation booth for this for this local creation organization,
okay,
or association. They're not even an organization, we're there just to talk to folks about science and evolution and creation, and encourage people that science does indeed point to creation if you have an open mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and all this after your trip to Siberia and Russia earlier in the year, in the spring. You're the foreign ambassador for Creation Moments, aren't you?
Oh, well, I don't know. Yeah, yes, I am.
Okay.
That's for sure.
Okay. All right. we'll have to get you a plaque for your office door then.
Well, and one of these days you may get a call from Malawi, too. The the people there were interested in this subject. And, I know the radio station plays Pastor Dobson's programs. I'm not sure if he talks about young Earth's creationism or not, but they were not strangers to the term. They knew the term, they knew the conflict, they understood that, and I thought that was an interesting place to be thinking about it, in a place where a whole bunch of scientists have come to find the earliest man or remains of early men, that there was, somebody said, is that 4 billion years ago? Really? You know? Yeah.
Well, Don usually joins us to talk about things of a scientific nature, and it's quite often evolution or creationism and science and faith issues. Today we're talking about methane, and there's an article over at MSN News, came up about 6 days ago. Hundreds of methane plumes erupting along the East Coast. Now, that's a fairly strong headline, but I have these visions of these columns of methane gas shooting up through the water off the eastern seaboard. What is this talking about, Don?
Well, it's methane gas seeping out of the ocean floor, mm-hmm. and the shelf, basically. It's not the deep, although there is methane gas seeping out of the deep ocean, but this is off the East Coast. And several spots on the East Coast, they finally did a kind of an ocean survey, and they were the folks were very, very surprised to see how many methane seepages, or little bubbles, basically coming up from the sea floor, there are.
It always delights me to hear that science is surprised, because you think, well, we know just about everything there is to know by now. Certainly, all these years of science and exploration and research and all these marvelous tools at the disposal of scientists everywhere, certainly there wouldn't be surprises. But there are surprises, and this is one of them. 570 methane seeps, and they have them mapped in 8 regions across the Atlantic seaboard here. I'm kind of looking at the article as well. Why would this have surprised them? I mean, maybe we don't know it all.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure we don't know it all. We haven't surveyed certainly all of the ocean floor. Mm-hmm. It's a big ocean out there,
and it's wet too.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean of course, you know, brings up the question as to, is the methane gas that's being produced, is that what we're finding in the atmosphere, is that, you know, instead it's a natural production versus, you know, activity from man, because mm-hmm. it's always man's fault for any type of potential pollutant. Now, you know, methane mm-hmm. gas is obviously flammable and could be used as an energy source and has been used as an energy source, and you know, in quote, natural gas, and so finding all of this natural gas is, you know, it's a possibility. Well, can this be mined? Can this be salvaged? Can this be whatever? But the researchers at this point, well, it's interesting, because the first first couple of paragraphs of this article says that they found all these methane gas. But we don't know. I mean, we're assuming it's methane, but we don't actually know, because we haven't measured it yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, all they did was, I mean, not all, but I mean, they did sonar studies of the ocean floor, and they see bubbles coming up from the ocean floor, so they are assuming that it's methane. And it, you know, it probably is, but it hasn't been verified to date that it's actually methane. And one of the aspects of the article that they also said, well, you know, the methane disperses in the ocean, and it doesn't actually make it up to the top. So there's very little methane coming into our atmosphere. I think that's an assumption too. And so,
well, yeah, I'm wondering how they know that. Is it just trapped in the water? Does it chemically change into something else as it bubbles through the water? These are described as bubble plumes, and not only, well, there are these 570 of them, but they say there could be tens of thousands of others around the world. And these are all, and these particular ones are in water less than 16, or more than, wait a minute, less than 1,600
feet.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so they've got that much water to go through. What happens to gas in water? Doesn't it just bubble to the top and then leak into the atmosphere? That would have been my first assumption.
Well, yeah, methane gas is a organic molecule, obviously. It's the smallest mm-hmm. organic molecule, but I'm sure some of it would disperse, you know, in the ocean, but it's not water loving. Although you can have in cold environments, you can have kind of methane in water freezing, you know, which they mentioned later down mm-hmm. in the article.
Yeah, they do see that in areas of the ocean. And this is methane. Methane produced by organisms too, isn't it? I mean, it's not just leaking out of the Earth's core or something. These are life forms at those depths that are producing the methane themselves.
That's right. It's bacteria. Mm-hmm. There's a bacteria that actually converts organic matter, if you will, into methane. And when I was living in Louisiana, where I grew up, we had natural methane being produced in the swamps as the organic matter, you know, decayed. There were methane gas on top of the swamps, and you could it would be, you know, in some areas it was dangerous if you had a light or something.
Think of the old swamps,
it could ignite.
The old swamp gas rationale for UFO sightings.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's methane. Did would those ignite from time to time?
I think now you're really pushing my memory. I think they would, from time to time.
Okay.
Now they're on top of the water.
That'd be quite a sight.
And they would, you know, eventually get dispersed if the wind would blow. But you could probably have enough concentration of methane gas that it would cause a problem.
Now this is not the same as carbon dioxide, is it? I mean, it's a different gas. But chemically, is there a big difference? Does one convert to the other, perhaps?
Well, only you have to oxidize methane, or you have to burn methane to get carbon dioxide.
Okay. So
methane is used, like I said, as a fuel, natural gas, and so you'd have to burn it to oxidize it into CO2. And CO2 doesn't burn.
If it's bubbling through water, though, wouldn't it tend to combine with oxygen, which is what oxygenation does? That's like a slow burn, isn't it? Isn't it the same thing, oxygen combining with the other elements?
Well, no, because water is all, the oxygen in the water is already tied up with hydrogen.
Locked up, okay.
And it takes some energy to break the carbon-hydrogen bond in the methane. So you would need, and obviously when you burn it, you know, you got heat, you would need some heat, and you get kind of activated oxygen, if you will. Free radical oxygen that would then bind with the carbon and produce the CO2.
So you would say it's unlikely that this methane would add at all to the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, which is the supposed culprit in global warming.
No, it wouldn't add to the carbon dioxide, but it would add to the methane in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And methane also, you know, is a atmospheric blocker, if you will, like carbon dioxide is, and could produce in effect a greenhouse effect, but you know, you've got a molecule that in this case would be active energetically to burn, whereas CO2 isn't. It's pretty it's a neutral molecule. But it has also been implicated in climate change. So, but it's like one of those molecules that's been blamed on industrial activity as opposed to natural causes.
Okay,
I thought it was interesting that the article didn't get around to climate change or global warming until the 17th paragraph. That's way, way, way down the list. It seems like the old days, and it wasn't that long ago, that global warming would have been in the headline.
Well, yes, it would have been. They now call it climate change, and there is absolutely, as we talked about, I think previously on other shows, there's no evidence for any global warming or any global cooling. Temperatures just haven't changed. And I heard yesterday, I don't remember where I heard it, but I heard yesterday that all of the ice that was melting in the Arctic is now reforming. So over the last 2 years, a massive amount of ice has been reforming again. So here we go with cycles.
Yeah, Mail Online. It's a London newspaper. The London Mail has got an article on it this morning, and I saw it over the weekend too. That the polar ice cap, the Arctic ice cap, has increased by nearly half. So there's a huge, huge, huge amount of ice. And Al Gore has announced that he's going to give his Nobel Prize back.
I'm sure of that, along with the money that goes with it.
Mm-hmm. Sure. All right. he's hanging his head in shame, and he said, it's just not right. I'm taking the movie off on Netflix, and I'm going to give the prize back.
Yeah, well, that would be the noble thing to do.
Very big of him. Yeah, it is. Well, interesting though, because they do address global warming or climate change, as they call it in the article, and say this is really, really not a factor. Although methane gas does block sunlight, as does carbon dioxide, thus keeping the warmth underneath here. But I think that's been pretty well dispelled. But I'm interested to know if establishment science is changing its position now. If they've gone from global warming to climate change, what's the next step?
You know. Well, it doesn't. You see, it doesn't matter because you can, once you call it climate change, whatever's happening today, they'll say, "Oh, okay, that's climate change." Well, mm-hmm. you know, different. the climate has been changing. Yeah. You know, going back from warmer environment to a cooler environment, and a warmer environment and a cooler environment. So they can basically say that, well, so this is the reason why we need to tax people, especially mm-hmm. the industrialized nations, so we can redistribute that wealth to the poorer nations that are also producing CO2 or mm-hmm. whatever pollutants into the atmosphere, and so. But they just don't have the industry that we have, so yeah. we need to be taxed and they don't. It's all in my opinion just a big political game again to mm-hmm. redistribute wealth.
And it seems to me one of the most effective refutations of that whole position is something we've talked about here on past programs, and that's the Earth's ability to balance itself. We've talked about the whirlpools that suck down carbon dioxide in the Antarctic and so reprocess the carbon dioxide. I'm looking at now they're saying perhaps 30,000 more of these methane bubble plumes in the oceans around the world. This seems to me a very natural process for handling the waste of all those bacteria.
Well, it is. I mean, it's a byproduct of the bacterial metabolism, mm-hmm. for example. And the simple fact is, you know, this has been going on for a long time. Now, of course, they say for millions and millions of years, but... You know, obviously mm-hmm. it hasn't been that long, but certainly ever since the flood and probably shortly after the flood, this has been going on. It's interesting where these vents are. There's a lot of biological life, like crabs and all kinds of other stuff. So there's a lot of nutrients in that area. Mm-hmm. So it's a place where, you know, wildlife, if you will, sea life, can flourish. So it's not a problem for the environment or for the ocean, and so why should we be concerned with it at all? Let nature do its thing, and we go about our business. But let's not make a big if you will, let's not make a big stink over this. It's an interesting discovery. And, maybe one day we'll see that, gee, there's more methane being produced naturally than anything that man could ever possibly do, mm-hmm. which is also the case for carbon dioxide. So,
okay, interesting points all. So people listening know, we're kind of in conversation with Mark Armitage. Now, you may remember Mark Armitage as
microscopist.
Microscopist. There you go. And a microbiologist. And he is the researcher who has found soft tissue in dinosaur bones, located in Montana. And he's really raising a ruckus with these findings. And he's got much of establishment science training their public relations weapons on him now. And he's lost his position at Cal State Northridge. And we talked to him a year ago. It was a year ago in August. And we're contemplating another conversation. He has a book out, and there's a lawsuit involved, and it kind of gets complicated. But I'm thinking it would be I would like to find out from Mark Armitage what the reaction of establishment science has been. Has anybody taken his science and refuted it? Do you know of any such response to Mark Armitage?
Well, it's you can't refute the facts. I mean, you can't refute the micrographs, you know, the pictures that he's taken, the beautiful pictures of osteocytes and blood vessels and blood cells and, you know, connective tissue and all this that he's found. Now, other researchers, the reason why other researchers haven't gotten into trouble in this area, and this is he's not the only one that's finding cell structures in soft tissue in dinosaurs, but you know, he was the first to find it in a Triceratops, for example, and he's done other research since then on various parts of the Triceratops and finding the same thing. So it's not the pictures themselves; it's how you interpret it. And his problem from the scientific community is that he's saying this is young, folks. This is not old stuff. And others are saying, well, these are osteocyte-like structures from, you know, dinosaurs millions of years old, but we don't understand the process of either fossilization or what, you know, whatever. They're making excuses so that they don't lose their credibility within the scientific community. Okay. Now, you know, of course, you know, I happen to agree with Mike that these are, I mean, Mark, that these are young, thousands of years old.
Well, the standard approach to dinosaurs is that they existed 65 million years ago. I mean, in that neighborhood of time. Mark Armitage is saying, no, these couldn't be older than perhaps 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 years at most.
Yes, at most. So that, you know, obviously brings us to the time of the flood, which is the best explanation of how these animals got buried in the first place. His young Earth proclamation is what's getting into trouble.
Okay. Well, we'll continue to talk with Mark Armitage and people connected with the lawsuit and see if we can maybe have a discussion on that matter. But I'm really more interested in the science aspect than any other aspect of Mark's story at the moment. So
where is the lawsuit now? Is it in the filing process? Have they heard original arguments?
I don't think it's yet gone before a judge, but I don't know what the process is or how long it might take. It could well take a couple of years to be resolved.
Yeah. Right. Oh, and sure. Probably will. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been filed, and so
been filed. Okay.
Yeah, the university, knows about it, and he was definitely, I mean, definitely railroaded out of the university where he was working. So he does have a legal case.
Well, it wasn't so much because of his scientific findings as it seems that the powers that be interpreted his conclusions as being religious in nature, and they weren't going to put up with that. They were scientific in nature.
Right.
So, yeah, interesting how the two realms collide there and produce problems for all concerned. Anyway, we'll track that down and hopefully we'll have Mark back here in a few weeks at best. We'll see how that goes. Don, again, thanks very much for joining us. Appreciate having you along today.
Well, it's good being back.
Who was tending the grapes while you were gone? I mean, did you
have,
armies of migrant workers tending your grape fields?
I wish.
No. Okay.
Yeah, no, unfortunately, that's a sad story. We had a attack of the Japanese beetle in our vineyard, so we pretty much solved the pig problem. We may have had one or two pigs come around for a little bit, but they stopped, looked like they stopped coming.
Okay.
And then we had an attack of the Japanese beetle, which wiped out our reds.
Oh, no.
This year. Yeah, so as soon as the grapes get ripe... It seems like everybody wants them. So, yeah, we this was not what I would call a successful year for growing.
Wow. That's too bad. That's too bad.
It was a Japanese beetle that came out of nowhere, or has anybody else gotten the same infestation?
Well, they've had this year, for whatever reason, the insect population has really shown itself and was much more than it was in years past. Of course, you know, this is only our second year, if you will, with enough grapes to do anything with.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really looking forward to harvesting our Shiraz when I got back and making. We probably had enough Shiraz for maybe 200 gallons. Anyway, it's pretty much all lost to these insects.
Okay. And with the remainder, whatever remains, it's a public relations thing. You could go the route of the tequila producers in Mexico. And when you bottle, we get your six bottles of Shiraz, put a little Japanese beetle in the bottom of each bottle. It's kind of a symbolic thing.
Yeah. So, last year it was hog's breath Shiraz, and this year it could be the Japanese beetle Shiraz. So,
Dr. Don, a member of the board of Creation Moments, and I want to recommend to people that you visit their website. It's creationmoments.com, and you can link to them from our website at brokenroadradio.com. You'll find a wealth of resources there for your own Bible studies, for your church, DVDs and books and publications and blogs on the site. It's well worth a visit to creationmoments.com. Don, again, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week, okay?
All right, sounds good.
Talk to you
next
Clark.
Week, Don.